ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Canto 11, Chapter 5, Narada's Teachings to Vasudeva, Text Number 9 and 10. Text 9, word meaning, Shriya, by their opulence, wealth, etc., Vibhutya, special abilities, Abhijanena, aristocratic heritage, Vidyaya, education, Tyagena, renunciation, Rupena, beauty, balena, strength, karmana, performance of Vedic rituals, jata, which is born, smayena, by such pride, antha, blinded, diyaha, whose intelligence, saha ishwaran, along with the Supreme Lord himself, satta, the saintly devotees, avamanyanti, they disrespect. Hari Priyan, who are very dear to Lord Hari. Hala, cruel persons. Shriya Vibhutya Bijanena Vidyaya. Tyagena rupena balena karmana. Jata smayenanda diya saheshwaran. Satova manyanti hari priyantala. Shriya vibhutya bhijanena vidyaya. Tyagena rupena balena karmana. Jata smayenanda diya saheshwaran. Satova manyanti hari priyantala. Shriya vibhutya bhijanena vidyaya. Tyagena rupena balena karmana. Jata smayenanda diya saheshwaran. Satova manyanti hari priyantala. Suya vibhutya vijanena vidyaya. Tyagena rupena balena karmana. Jatasmayanandha diyasmayishwaram. Satova manyanti hari priyantala. Sriya vibhutya bhijanena vidyaya. Tyagena rupena balena karmana. Jatasmayenandha viyasaheshwaram. Satova manyanti hari priyantala. Shriya vibhutya bhijanena vidyaya. Tyagena rupena balena karmana. Jatasmai nandha dhirakshanishparam. Sato vamanyanti hai priyashala. Ladies. Sriya ribhutya vijanena vidyaya. Jagena rupena balena paramana. Jatasmai nandha dhiyasthaheshwaram. Sato vamanyanti hari priyakala. Sriya vibhutya vijanena vidyaya. Jagena rupena balena paramana. Jatasmai nandha dhiyasthaheshwaram. Sato vamanyanti hari priyakala. Translation: the intelligence of cruel-minded persons is blinded by false pride because of great wealth, opulence, prestigious family connections, education, renunciation, personal beauty, physical strength, and successful performance of Vedic rituals. Being intoxicated with this false pride, such cruel persons blaspheme the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees. Report by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. The attractive qualities exhibited by the conditioned soul originally belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the reservoir of all attractive qualities. The moonshine is actually the reflected effulgence of the sun. Similarly, the living entity reflects for a brief time a particular quantity of the Lord's opulences. Not knowing this, atheistic persons become intoxicated by such reflected opulences, and thus blinded, they condemn themselves more and more by criticizing the Lord and his devotees. They are unable to understand how they have become abominable, and it is difficult to prevent them from going to hell. We'll do text 10 also. We can chant together. Sarveshu shasvatanubhrishtravastitam yata kamatmanam abhishtam ishwaram vedopagitam chana shinvate buddha manoratanam pravadanti bhaktaya. The Personality of Godhead is eternally situated within the heart of every embodied being. Still, the Lord remains situated apart, just as the sky, which is all-pervading, does not mix with any material object. Thus the Lord is the supreme worshipable object and the absolute controller of everything. He is elaborately glorified in the Vedic literature, but those who are bereft of intelligence do not like to hear about him. They prefer to waste their time discussing their own mental concoctions, which inevitably deal with gross material sense gratification, such as sex life and meat eating. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Vedaischa sarvar aham eva vedyaha. The goal of all Vedic knowledge is to know the Lord, who is the absolute truth. Although this purpose of the Vedas is clearly revealed both in the Vedic literature itself and by the self-realized acharyas, foolish people cannot grasp this simple truth. They prefer to cultivate knowledge of illicit sex by discussing their sexual partners and experiences. They also eagerly describe and recommend to their friends the best restaurants for eating meat, and they are fond of glorifying drugs and liquor by elaborately describing the drunken and hallucinogenic effects of their sinful experiences. The materialistic sense gratifiers eagerly call one another on the telephone, congregate in clubs and committees, and enthusiastically go on hunting, drinking, and gambling excursions, thus filling their lives with the mode of ignorance. They have neither the time nor the inclination to discuss the absolute truth, Krishna. Unfortunately, they neglect the Supreme Lord, who therefore severely punishes such foolish persons in order to bring them back to their senses. Everything belongs to the Lord, and everything is meant for the Lord's enjoyment. When the living entity dovetails his activities for the pleasure of the Lord, he experiences unlimited happiness. Yena sattvam shujed jasmad brahma saukyam tvanantam. There is actually no happiness in material affairs, and the Lord mercifully punishes the intoxicated conditioned soul to bring him back to his real life. Unfortunately, materialistic persons do not heed the advice of the Supreme Lord in Bhagavad Gita or that of the Lord's representatives who speak in allied literatures such as Srimad Bhagavatam. Instead, such sense gratifiers consider themselves to be most eloquent and learned. Every materialistic person actually feels that he is the most intelligent person, and thus he has no time to hear the actual truth. Nevertheless, the personality of Godhead, as described in this verse, waits patiently within the heart of the conditioned soul, encouraging him to recognize the Lord, who is sitting beside him. Such recognition of the personality of Godhead is the beginning of all auspiciousness and happiness for the conditioned soul. Om Jnanativinandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. This line in the end of the purport kind of jumps out at me. Every materialistic person actually feels that he is the most intelligent person. If you were to ask people if they thought they were the most intelligent person, I suspect most people would say no. But it seems to be what the point is here, is that we act as if we're the most intelligent person because we don't listen to authority, spiritual authority. We think we know what's best for us. So we act according to our own understanding, whatever our conditioned intelligence is. We take that to be the authority. We have to decide for ourselves. Today we have the idea that everybody has their own truth. If it's true for you, people think they're very liberal and broad-minded, and any crazy thing somebody says, they say, well, if that's true for you, then that's truth. That's your truth. So they honor this idea that everybody is intelligent, at least for their own lives, and the most intelligent person when it has to do with living their own life. So the context of these verses we've been hearing about, this chapter, is about those who don't surrender to the Supreme Personality of God, who don't worship the Lord. Two categories of persons were given in the beginning: those who don't know anything, and those who have heard but choose not to follow the Vedic scriptures, not to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That second category, those who have heard from the Vedas and choose not to follow, was followed up by several verses, the few that came just before this one. And this one may also be in that same context, because in the list of the things that people are proud of, we see one of the things that they are proud of their performance of Vedic sacrifices. So everyone is proud of something. That's why we don't surrender to the Lord, because of our pride. And here we have a list, some of the things people are proud of. Of course, the point, very nice point made in the second purport, is that it's all Krishna's. And also in the first purport, the idea of, was that in the first one or the second one? The moon reflects the sunlight. So we're just reflecting the qualities. So what can we be proud of? We don't have any qualification. We're just showing someone else's qualities, revealing them in a sense. So everything belongs to Krishna. And when we show them in some way because they're borrowed from him, then we become very proud that they belong to us. We're the creator of them. Now, the persons who do this, who don't surrender to Krishna, they're called Kala. Kala means envious or cruel-minded person. And their the list of their different opulences that they're proud of here. First, it's Shriya. It's translated here, by their opulence, wealth, etc. And Vibhutya, special qualities. Translated slightly differently. What does it say in the translation? The intelligence of cruel-minded persons is blinded by false pride based on great wealth. So the first thing is people are proud of their wealth. Not too many of us have that to be worried about, but there are people who have wealth. They're very proud of it. We see this, of course, all over the world. There are divisions of society. And the proud people. One thing, in America, we may not see it so much because the people who really have a lot of money, they kind of stay. When you're really, really rich, you don't have to mix with the riffraff. You can just stay by yourself. You have everything you want given to you. But we see, for example, in India, we see how the stratification of society is so strong. The rich people are, again, we have the same idea. They come with big entourage, and they don't really have to do anything themselves. They have servants doing everything, and they're very proud. So, and they, of course, they think they're so qualified just because they have money. However they got it, today we have the trust babies, trust fund people who were born into rich families, and their whole life they just had so much money, can do anything they want. And they go to the best schools, of course, and they always have everything the best just as a result of their money. And they also get this idea that somehow they're better than everyone else just because they have the opulence of wealth. And the second one here, this mentions Vibhutya, Vibhuti, Krishna's, one category of Krishna's incarnations is Vibhutis. They're considered a kind of incarnation. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 7th chapter, in the 10th chapter, where Krishna says, I am this, I am that, those are his Vibhutis. So Vibhutya means special abilities. So we all have some kind of ability to do something. And the materialists, of course, again, they think it's as a result of their own power. Somehow it's an illogical thing. Somehow you're just born with it, really. It's not that you did anything to do it. And even if you did, there are so many conditions that have to be met. If you want to increase, for example, your knowledge or your strength or your influence in any way, some ability that you have, your ability to try to accumulate that, to increase it, to improve it, is dependent on so many things, being right. Sometimes, once in a while, some person who's very successful in some field will have to admit, well, I had a lot of good luck along the way. Once in a while, somebody may say something like that. Usually they like to say, well, I worked really hard and I set my sights and I gave up this and that so I could accomplish this. But generally, it is true. People have to have certain breaks, and they have to know certain people. Just like many people who are famous today, they're famous in the entertainment industry. So there are so many talented people in the music industry. You know, today they have with electronics. Somebody can't sing at all. The electronics can make you sing on key. They actually have auto-tune. You're not a good singer, but you just maybe you have the look. So you get some producer with a lot of money, will take your voice and pass it through a machine, make it sound great, teach you how to dance and whatever, put a bunch of splashing lights and give you an entourage to dance along with you. And it's all the creation of somebody else. So even though you don't have to have much talent, if you have the right connections, things can happen for you. And that's certainly it's the way things happen today often. People just, they're outside forces creating them. And of course, they become very proud and engage in all kinds of nonsense things. So these special abilities, they come from Krishna. Now, we criticize the materialists, of course. They won't ever admit that these are coming from God. There may be some, of course, there are some pious people in society, but many people will just challenge No, I did it on my own. So we also, of course, we may get some talents. Some. The other day when Tama Harper was giving class, he was talking about how we can't be proud of what we've gotten as a result of spiritual life, our spiritual practices. So if I was thinking, what does that mean exactly? What kinds of things? Because really the spiritual gifts you get, just like in the story of Cardamom Muni and Devahuti, when after she served him for a very long time and he had some yogic powers and she didn't think she had been getting anything really just by her service, but he said, now I'm going to give you, just see these powers that I'm giving, these accomplishments of my yoga, I'm going to share them with you. So what they were exactly, some kind of mystic power or something. So certainly in spiritual life, our accomplishments, it seems like they're invisible. How can you be, what are you proud of exactly in spiritual life? Your internal, now I have so much devotion, then it's like, then you're disqualified immediately. If you say that, then you really don't have devotion. So what are the subtle kinds of accomplishments? Of course, there are things that we get as, you might say, byproducts. Not exactly the result of devotional service, but the result of just our life in Krishna consciousness. For example, maybe because you've been singing bhajans for many years, now you're a really good bhajan singer. But that doesn't equate necessarily with devotion, advancement in spiritual life, or whatever. The things that we learn, I often think of this as how in a very common thing in any religion where you have people who are nominally in that, you know, you have nominal Christians, they were born in a Christian family, or nominal Jews, and so on. And then you have people who are actually practicing the religion. So as we grow, as our society grows, we're also going to have, you might say, more and more of that. We'll have children who are born as devotees. We teach our children, oh, there's a devotee. You go shopping and you see someone from the temple, and says, oh, there's a devotee, and the child is happy. Oh, there's a devotee. So we say devotees. So what is a devotee? A devotee is, well, anyone who belongs now to our culture. We actually have sort of a subculture of devotees. You know, Hare Krishna, I'm a Hare Krishna. But there's devotees, and then there are those who are practicing sadhana bhakti. Not necessarily everyone that we label as a devotee. Of course, we don't want, I don't want to offend everybody, but yeah, it is certainly true that you can be in this, because we are, again, we're developing a culture, the Hare Krishna subculture. But there's devotees, and then there are those who are actually practicing sadhana bhakti and trying to make advancement in spiritual life. So we can advance or develop expertise in the kinds of things that devotees do, and not necessarily be developing on internally our spiritual life. So we have to be very careful. So I'm kind of separating two kinds of opulences that we might develop as we progress or age in Krishna consciousness as the years go by. So we shouldn't be proud of either side, because as soon as there's pride in the spiritual accomplishments or so-called advancement, then that's a sign that we're not really advanced. And then, of course, the other things are not really an indication that you're an advanced devotee just because you can sing well or speak well or whatever. So that's something we have to be very careful of. The spiritual side of things, this came up when Urmila Prabhu was here and she was giving her talks on the, what is it, Manasiksha, which she translated. I haven't read the book yet, but it seemed like repeatedly one of the things she brought up, or it was seemed to be the point that she was stressing in her class on it, which apparently is a major theme in this book, is not to be proud of your spiritual advancement. So I was thinking, probably for maybe a lot of devotees, that's not a problem. In fact, many devotees, it may be the opposite that's true. We lack spiritual self-esteem. We think, why, I'm so fallen, I'm never going to be advanced. And I had a kind of a reaction, I'll say something a little personal, but this morning when those of you who were at Mangalarti, when Divyanga Prabhu, he mentioned how Vaisheshika Prabhu had, I forget what he mentioned a couple of different instances, but one of them, he collected $40,000 in 50 minutes. get, I don't know how many, thousands and thousands of Bhagavad Gita's sponsored. So when you hear something like that, you should be, wow, that's really great. But what I think is, boy, I'm completely useless. I can't do anything anywhere near that. My life is a waste, you know. So I'm afraid many of us may fall. Of course, maybe I'm just a psycho. I don't know. I got a problem. I need to see a shrink. But I feel that, you know, maybe, you know, as devotees, that because we have such a high standard, we're trying to become pure devotees, and we want to do great things for Prabhupada, but maybe we're just struggling with the very basic things in Krishna consciousness. So maybe pride in our spiritual advancement may not be a big problem for a lot of us. Maybe the other side is just we become discouraged because we may think, well, what's happening? Nothing's happening. I'm chanting and chanting. When's the light going to come on? When is something great going to happen in my life? So that can, of course, that's also an anartha, you can say. We can't become discouraged in spiritual life. We have to go on. We have to have faith. Of course, one of the offenses against the holy name is to not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy name. So if you think, well, nothing's happening, then you may think, well, I guess the holy name isn't perfect. It's not changing me. It's not changing my heart. So we have to get rid of that conception somehow. We have to throw that out. We have to become convinced by the conviction of the self-realized devotees, like Srila Prabhupada. There was a line in one of these purports about this. Although this purpose of the Vedas, that we need to worship the Lord, is clearly revealed both in the Vedic literature itself and by self-realized acharyas. So I've been reading, I've come across it a couple of different places. And Jiva Goswami quotes, there's a verse somewhere in the Upanishads that says that the most powerful evidence, we say sadhu, shastra, and guru, the most powerful evidence is the witness of the sadhu, basically. Even more powerful than the Vedas themselves is when someone has realized the Vedas and they tell you about it, basically. So that's like, we can see that example in Srila Prabhupada himself. Like so many people read Bhagavad Gita, so there's the Shastra. But until Prabhupada came and personified the Shastra, exemplified it, then it didn't really take, you might say. We had to, in order to realize that it was true, we had to see someone who had realized the knowledge and was presenting it to us. So if we have a lack of faith ourselves, that's why it's so important. In fact, this is one thing that's maybe a little controversial, but I hear it especially stressed by those who have left ISKCON, that the importance of personal association with a sadhu. They like to make this point because apparently it's there, and our acharyas have made this point. It's not that only hearing is not necessarily enough. There has to be personal association. So of course, Prabhupada created our society, so we would have personal association with sadhus. And I think maybe, of course, it's a problem if you think you have to go somewhere else for the sadhu. There's nobody advanced enough within ISKCON, so you have to go outside to find the sadhu. But that, anyway, I just want to say that this is actually a principle that's there in the Shastra, that to personally sit in someone's presence, to be in the presence of someone from whom bhakti is coming, prema is emanating from that person, it has a powerful effect. It's like to be in Srila Prabhupada's presence. Naturally, we wanted to be when Prabhupada was coming to a temple, coming for Rath Yatra. I was in San Francisco, so when Prabhupada would come for Rath Yatra, devotees would come from all over to see Srila Prabhupada at that time. So we wanted to be in his presence, and you would feel something from that. So to be in the association of devotees is very important for us to counteract this kind of malaise we might get into or discouragement that we're not making any advancement in Krishna consciousness. It may help to see others advancing in Krishna consciousness and demonstrating the qualities of devotees. So let me just mention couple more. I won't go through this whole list. I like verses that have lists because never run out of things to say. You just go to the next word. So this is all about things that we can be proud of. So one of the, I thought this was interesting, this one here, Abhijanena, which means aristocratic heritage. So that means, especially, of course, in the Vedic context, you're born in a Brahmin family or an aristocratic family, and you have so much going for you. But even in America, of course, we tend not to think of aristocracy so much, but we have aristocratic families. In fact, I often think, or people who are famous because their families are famous, I often think how I've never known anyone, like from my, you know, people I grew up with, whoever became famous. maybe that's because of where it was. I don't know. There I had a small community of people that I knew. So I had to come to Krishna consciousness to meet someone from a famous family, Ambarish Prabhu. So we have our aristocracy, America. He's part of the American aristocracy. And of course, he renounced that, which is quite an amazing thing, actually. When you come from a background like that, as I was saying, there are many rich people, trust fund babies, they have everything all their life. So he was raised in that kind of, for most of us, it's like we don't even know what it's like to have everything you want or need always, never worry about money and so on. So most of us, we don't have that to be proud of. That's the point. But there are people who do have that to be proud of. And that can be a problem in Krishna consciousness. So just a couple more that are mentioned in this. Education. We find educated people tend to be more atheistic, actually. That's a big problem. One thing I've often also seen is that those who tend to, who are a little more spiritual among educated people, just like scientists, for example, if they start getting some glimpse of maybe there's some spirit behind all of this, they tend to be impersonalists. It seems like jnana, they're jnanis in a sense, jnana tends to take you to impersonalism. That seems to be the example that we see. So again, you need the association of someone like Srila Prabhupada to break through that fog of jnana so that you can see the qualities, see the personality of this Supreme Lord. So education can be a big problem. People become educated, they become elitist, they think everybody else doesn't know everything and we know everything. Prabhupada used to go through his list. They think, you know, they had their PhD and MA, PhD, and he used to give all these letters. I don't even know what they mean. And in India, people like to tack these letters on. Sometimes I'll get an article submitted by somebody from India, and they'll give me a list of, you know, PhD, THD, LSD, I don't know, whatever they are. All these things they like to, they really like to tack them on there. So that's not, we don't do that so much in America, but people can become very proud. In fact, sometimes they get multiple PhDs, they keep adding them on. So they think they know so much, but too much learning can be a big problem. They know so much, but then they don't know anything, actually. When you get right down to it, they don't know the most important things. So then tyagena, renunciation is mentioned. I don't think we have to worry. People in America that tend not to be proud of being renounced. Unless maybe in charity, they give a lot in charity, so they're showing they want to be proud of that. They want to be seen for that. Beauty, of course, that's the big one. People are proud of their beauty, which they had nothing to do with. Of course, they're born with. And strength. Some of these things, I was thinking you can use them like Prabodhananda Saraswati, Dante Nidayatinakam Parayor Nepatya. He says how you flatter someone, oh, you're very learned, and then you say, forget everything you know and surrender to Lord Chaitanya. So we can sound like we flatter people sometimes to help, just to make friends with them, really, and try to engage them in Krishna consciousness. Just like somebody's really strong. I had an experience, we were selling something years ago from my house. I forget what it was. I think it was a dishwasher that we didn't want. And I was thinking, well, how somebody came to buy it, and I thought, well, how's he going to carry this? So the guy's a big, he just picked it up, carried it to the back of his pickup truck, you know. And There are people who are like that. They're just big and strong, and they like to do things that take muscle. Muscle-bound people like to show off their muscles. So you can say, "Ah, you're really strong. You know, take this Bhagavad Gita, it'll make you stronger, or whatever." So the opulences that people have, of course, they're meant to be used in Krishna's service, and they can also be used to help bring them to Krishna consciousness. So I'll stop here. A few minutes for questions. Let me just look over here first. Any of the ladies? Tal Mahaprabhu?
Hare Krishna, thank you very much. I thought it was a very interesting point you were making earlier about the need for the sort of living association of the saintly person, the sadhus. Of course, you know, we all know the idea of Vani and Vapu, and that Vani is considered to be more important than Vapu. Of course, we can't deny how wonderful it was to have the personal association of Prabhupada, and as you said, we all tried to attempt to get that whenever we could. If we were anywhere in hundreds of miles where Prabhupada was going to be, usually we would find a way to get there. And there's no doubt how many people came to Krishna consciousness simply by the personal presence of Srila Prabhupada. On the other hand, I was just trying to think, so where does that leave us now, of course? And I think two points. First of all, of course, we do have the association of saintly personalities. I think all of the followers of Srila Prabhupada, you're all saintly people that we all have the opportunity to associate with, because all the followers of Prabhupada embody some of his qualities and some of his knowledge. And, you know, and they all have their own realizations and impart that to one another in class. And I think the other point is that we have probably an unprecedented opportunity to associate with Srila Prabhupada far beyond any other past acharya, mm-hmm. You know, just through the amount of literature, purports, letters, conversations, tapes, memories, videos, you know. So in other words, I think it's very, very possible for current devotees to have a very deep sense of association with Srila Prabhupada. And maybe you could talk a little more about that idea, and because I wasn't so familiar with that verse you're talking about that says how that physical presence is necessary.
Yeah, when I hear that, the idea that, you know, how important it is to, you know, associate with a most advanced devotee, I feel like it's not something that Prabhupada stressed himself. For one thing, it was impractical. He couldn't have the whole movement be with him all the time, obviously. So he wanted us to create, you know, we ourselves become advanced in Krishna consciousness and take advantage of his instruction. And that's what he emphasized more and more. And one thing I think about often, people think about certain, you know, that you have to do this or you have to do that to make spiritual advancement. I always think that what it comes down to is yasya prasadad bhagavat prasadu. If you please the spiritual master, that's what counts when you get right down to it. It's not this particular thing or that particular thing. It's pleasing Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada gave us so many ways to please him. The main, of course, he wanted us to work together, to cooperate together and push on this movement. And if we do that and do our part, that will please him. And it's his pleasure that's really the key to advancement in spiritual life. So, and of course, also what you're saying, because I tend to think that too, in one sense, do I really have to be sitting in the room with that person? If I'm watching video of the person, is it pretty much the same thing? Is Krishna limited to the material contraption? It makes a difference. Somehow it filters out the potency of the person. But, you know, they do make claims like that. Like you're not going to make spiritual advancement just by reading Srila Prabhupada's books, for example. I've heard this said. Well, I tend not to give a lot of credence to that, you know. So, okay, I think it's true, yes. You can get greatly inspired just by sitting in the presence of someone who has an aura about them or whatever it is, spiritual aura. That's certainly true. But I don't think we can discount the potency and all the things that Srila Prabhupada left us for making advancement in spiritual life. Madhavati?
In my understanding about this particular point, at least how I see it, is that both are extremely important, like Mahaprabhu was saying. The devotees, when we are in physical presence of the devotees, I'm not talking about the Mahabhagavat here, but when you're in the physical presence of devotees, you rub against each other, you serve each other, and naturally you become humble. The aspect of, I think, the cultivation of certain qualities happen when you're amongst devotees. And that, I cannot say shastrically, or I guess it's just my own thinking, I guess, speculation, but I think that may not happen so easily if you're just, you know, sitting down and hearing, you know, from the books, you know, or even like talking about Srila Prabhupada's presence or somebody, another Mahabhagavat's presence, as you're sitting down and hearing, that certainly brings a bhakti process. But his instruction is also to be with the devotees, and so I think it's both of them are equally important both those things are needed, you know. At least that's how I see it.
Yeah, there are certainly instructions about Satan Prasangam Amavirya Sambhado, be in the association of devotees. Prabhupada set up the program, so we come together and discuss Krishna. And I think that's a very good point you're making. It's one thing to sit in your apartment and chant all day or read all day, but it's important to come together with devotees because there are certain qualities that grow from that.
You were talking about spiritual pride. One thing that kind of it's a little challenging in the purport to text 5 of Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada says that we should have the intelligence to understand our own position and the position of others.
Mm-hmm.
And so there, it's actually a required feature of advancement to be able to discriminate how we're doing, you know, how much advancement we've made. So you were saying how I got so much devotion, and then you just kind of, it's self-defeating, you know, it's self-contradictory. But then on the other hand, you know, as we go through the years, we can see changes that are taking place in our consciousness. We may be experiencing more taste, we may have more faith, and we may have more capacity to remain equipoised in difficult circumstances. You know, I mean, these are different indices that are there. How else do you evaluate it? How else do you have the discrimination unless you take some type of an objective, but not a puffed up view of what's going on? I mean, also what comes with the process is an understanding of, wow, I got a long ways to go. That's, you know, you become more and more aware of the shortcomings that are present. Anyway, those are just some thoughts that come to my mind. What do you think?
Could you give an example of some of those indices?
Indices of advancement? Well, put me on the spot. Well, one thing is, as we advance in Krishna consciousness, advancement is based upon our attachment and love for Krishna. So see devotees, you know, that have like an incredible attachment, say, to the deities, or to chanting the holy name. So that's something that can gradually increase. If we're seeing, I actually do love Krishna. Another thing that the vision of a devotee changes as he goes through, comes from Kanishta to Madhyama to Uttama, he becomes more and more respectful of other devotees, and is more appreciative. And there's also this awakening of compassion that takes place. If we see our service shifting mean, like in the, like a lot of devotees, their first services were book distribution. So it was all kind of like, you know, who could get the biggest score? You know, and it wasn't, and then their dealings oftentimes were really rough. You know, book distributors would come home and be really mean to everybody else and get really puffed up about it. But then you see those same book distributors 20, 30 years later, they've got humility and, you know, they're really caring about others and trying to help them. So those kind of indices, you know, respect, I mean, that's, as one goes up, you know, you can see that, well, hey, I've really got to be sensitive in my dealings with others. Otherwise, you know, I can't really be their servant. I can't really help them with their Krishna consciousness.
One thing I think is that we don't have to make fine gradations. You know, it's like these are broad categories as they're giving it in the Nectar of Instruction. The person who's not initiated, who's just chanting, you give them mental respect, and the person who's actually following sadhana bhakti, then you, what does it say, make friendship with that person, or more respect at least. And then the uttamadhikari, of course, and you worship and serve that person. So we have these broad categories, so I don't know if we have to make a list of all the devotees and alachuans top to bottom. As long as we put ourselves on the bottom, I guess it's... Yeah, probably shouldn't have directed you. Order of merit. Madame Mohan Prabhu?
When I was hearing the list in the class, it reminded me of the prayer by Queen Kunti. You probably know it. Aishwarya. You know the prayers by Queen Kunti. And it seemed like it was almost the same list. You know.
Those oh, two. Yeah. Janmaishwarya Shruta Shri. Yeah, so those are considered to be the result of pious activities. Good birth, opulence or wealth, knowledge and beauty.
And then another one that popped into my mind was the demons. There's so much I have today. I'm also perfect. Yeah. Power. I'm surrounded by aristocratic, you know, so mm-hmm. Those things we also can see if there's any of that there, that they that's where the roots are, is in that demoniac consciousness. I am mine. I'm powerful. There's no one as smart as I am.
One thing that's so nice about the association of devotees is that we know that pride is not a good thing. And we know that, you know, we for us, that's something we cherish, the idea of humility. So it's almost like, you know, when you see that someone, we feel uncomfortable. But in other communities, for example, they may not necessarily be there. People are proud and people think, well, that's okay. And that's the way that they're proud. They're just proud. That's good. It's okay to be proud, but we don't look at it that way. So there are so many nice qualities that devotee, we know that 26 qualities of devotee that we're trying to cultivate, which makes such a nice society. I often think like that. There's so many, I see some devotee do something, I say, that's such a nice devotee. And I think, there's so many nice devotees. It's nice living in a society of devotees because there's so many nice people, the good people. We're trying to cultivate goodness, actually. We're trying to be good. We're trying to be the best people. We're trying to be perfect, actually, ultimately. So we understand what goodness is. We're cultivating that. So it's something like pride, and we know that, no, it's not good. I shouldn't be proud. It's not a good thing. We recognize it.
There's just one other last point, is it? The purport of 116, the Bhagavatam, the Prabhupada said to hear and then explain it is more important than just reading it yourself. So you said that after you understand something, you should explain it that way. It works.
Okay, are we done? Oh, Kaliapanika?
I always lament the loss of the aristocracy. You know, one of the reasons why I joined the movement is because I could see that the aristocracy was just a total mess, totally degraded and confused. Arishta means the best, and Krasi, of course, means ruled by. So these people are created by Krishna and they're meant to rule, and we need their rule, actually. So that's one. But I had a question. You were talking about how the popular notion that your truth is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just trying to think, how does that, in Vedic terms, you know, everything's covered by the Vedic philosophers, the Sat Darshan. So, mm-hmm. where is that, how does that show up in Vedic descriptions?
Well, sure, it shows up in that Yatamat Tatapat. That was, you know, whatever your path is, that's as good as any other. So worship Durga, worship this, that, and you'll get the same result. Of course, it's all, really, it's all kind of impersonalism in general. At least, now it may not be exactly, you know, Vedic. I don't know Vedic scholars. It's true, we have our six darshans, but that's an inexhaustible list. But in more modern times, offshoots of the Vedic, that's kind of what modern Hinduism is today. In many ways, you can pretty much worship anything or be anything you want and just call yourself a Hindu. Then, so that's true for you. That's what that Ramakrishna spread, this idea that Prabhupada always lambasted. Yatamat Tatapat. I think that was Ramakrishna, right? And so that's it. Even though it doesn't make any sense, any path you take, you're going to end up at the same place. That's the logic of that. But people, of course, today is because I mentioned in the last class we're in the postmodern era, so like philosophy is pretty much out the window, especially when it comes to the big questions. So it doesn't have to make sense. If you believe it, okay, it's good enough. Because ultimately there is no truth. One interesting thing about science is that generally science thinks there is a truth. At least that's sort of a fundamental assumption of science, is that there's a truth out there. It's not just in our minds. There actually is a truth, and we're trying to figure out what it is. At least generally that's the idea. Of course, there may be theoretical scientists who come up with other ideas, but generally speaking, that's sort of a fundamental idea, that there is an objective reality. And we're trying to figure out how it works. Pita Deepabhu, our historian of science. PhD.
They may think it's an absolute truth, but they have no access to it.
Yeah.
So the tendency then is to artificially complain, artificially inflate your conditional, limited, incomplete perspectives on what's out there as somehow absolute, and the historical experiences, it's not. You know, it's just a conditional, limited perspective filled with the four defects. So there very well may be an absolute truth out there, but these exercises aren't accessing it. And that's been the experience.
Yeah. But even if they don't consciously think of what their philosophy is, what they're doing shows that they actually think that there is something that's real out there. All right, let's stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.